Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. Thank you for joining us for a response of a day for the 10th of Av. 10th of Av of Tufshin Mem, Ravad Yosef and Shut Yabia Omer responded to a court in Haifa about a woman whose husband had disappeared or was lost at sea or lost in an airplane crash, but was lost. So it's Ravad Yosef, and who can testify to free an Avgunat from Shut Yabia Omer? Chelek Chet, the 8th volume of Yavbiya Omer, Evan Ezer Yud Chet, Evan Ezer, the 18th responsum. Ravad Yosef does not generally date his tshuvot, or I have not found many tshuvot dated in his responses. So this is an opportunity to learn a little bit from Ravad Yosef, and I'm glad you're here for us to do this together. So he's writing to the Beit Din in Haifa. The Beit Din in Haifa had ruled that this Agunah, it seems like her name is Yocheved Sadeh. That's what the name in the tshuva, and he's pleased and honored that they've asked for his opinion. They've said that they won't let her remarry without his agreement. So he is now going to write about this question, and he wants to add a few things. And the central issue that he wants to discuss is that it seems that the central testimony that would lead us to understand that this woman's husband had unfortunately had sadly passed away was the testimony of an El Al steward. We don't get the whole case here in the tshuva. It seems like this man, maybe he was on a plane and the plane crashed, or something about this man was connected to this steward, this airline flight attendant, we call them today. They used to be called stewards and stewardesses. It's a man named Mem Wertheim. And the problem is, and he's testifying that he saw the man had been killed or had died. And he works as an El Al flight attendant. Problem is, El Al, suddenly in 1980, Tufshin Mem, had flights that went on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. And if so, all of the flight attendants have the chazakah of Mechalei Shabbos for Hesya. They have a standing in halacha that they violate Shabbos in public. They violate Shabbos in ways that everybody knows about. So that, ordinarily we would think, would invalidate him as a witness. And that's going to be the challenge before us. What can we do about accepting the testimony of this man that the husband has passed away? Everybody wants to because they want to free her. They assume the man has passed away. They want her to be able to remarry if she wants to. And so that's what they want to do. But we have this halachic problem because this man is not observant in a very public way. Now, one avenue of leniency might have been the Maharam Shik said that even in a city where the majority of the people in the city are Mechalei Shabbat, the majority of the people in the city violate Shabbat, if somebody comes to court and gives testimony, the Maharam Shik held, we can assume that particular witness is a valid witness. We're allowed to assume that because he says that if somebody comes to court, we can assume that they're valid witnesses because the fact that the majority of the city is no longer observant does not require us to assume that about a person we happen to meet up. That was a lenient to the Maharam Shik. But Ravad Yosef says, but if you look into the El Al Corporation and you look at the roster of flight attendants, there's not even one, as far as he can tell, who's Shomer Shabbat, who's Shabbos observant. And part of the reason for it is that El Al won't hire Shomer Shabbat at the time, wouldn't hire flight attendants who are Shomrei Shabbat to observe Shabbat because they didn't want to have to worry about the scheduling of flight attendants so that they won't have to get on flights that fly on Shabbat Yom Tov. And a phrase that comes up a lot in these kinds of discussions about Volotin HaRabim, and that were great sins in the situation, the unfortunate situation we have in the world, that's the way it is. And that would mean that if an El Al flight attendant were to come to a Beit Din, the Beit Din could not use this leniency of the Maharam Shik because there's no reason to believe. There's really no reason. It's not that the majority of flight attendants are not of Shomrei Shabbat, it's that it seems like 100% of flight attendants are not Shomrei Shabbat. So then he says, well, there's another avenue of approach to this question, which is, as the Ksod HaChoshen had pointed out in Shulchan Aruch, the Nebuka Yosef in Sanhedrin had said that when we talk about valid witnesses and invalid witnesses, so there's two kinds of people who are invalid because of their reshut, because of their failures of observance. One is what's called a Rashad de Hamas. So a Rashad de Hamas is somebody whose lack of observance is connected to greed. And then there's a Rashad de Eino de Hamas. A Rashad de Eino de Hamas is somebody who's not observant the way they should be, but it has nothing to do with greed. So the Nebuka Yosef said, if somebody is not a Rashad de Hamas, his lack of observance is not connected to greed or a desire for money, so the fact that when we say the Rishaim, people who are not observant, are generally not able to give testimony, then Milgram Yosef said here that will only apply to those things that need little, that need the most valid forms of testimony, that need full testimony. Because with a Russia, the Eino de Hamas, and a Russia whose lack of observance is not connected to money, the fact that they can't give testimony in court, the Menuke Yosef says, is a Gzirat HaKatuv. It's a scriptural decree. It's the pasuk says, "Al tashet yadcha im rasha, al tashet rasha aid." Don't allow a rasha to be an aid. But it's not a practical concern. There's no particular reason. The Mugos seems to be saying that we would have assumed that general rishaim will lie in court, will not give valid testimony. The fact that we can't use them is a gzirat hakatuv. It's a pasuk tells us things. There are many issues in halacha where we could have easily imagined handling it a different way. The verse tells us a certain way. We have to follow the verse, so we follow the Torah says. The reason that distinction is important for the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef is that in those situations, when there's no need for fully valid testimony, the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef held you could be machshir a rasha sheino shel Hamas. You could be machshir, you could allow the testimony of a witness who is not a witness of Hamas, who's not a rasha of Hamas, whose lack of observance isn't connected to greed. Meaning, since it's only a, not only, since it's a gzirat hakatuv, it's not logic that led us to think of this witness as not valid for our purposes. Therefore, we only have to take the gzirat hakatuv, we only have to take the pasuk as far as the pasuk went, but we don't have to extrapolate it because the pasuk didn't tell us you have to assume that Rishaim are liars. The pasuk said, you can't allow Rishaim to be edim, to be witnesses. So the Nebuchadnezzar says, if there's not a necessity of witnesses, therefore, maybe we can accept them. That would mean that in the case of a testimony for a woman to tell her that her husband has passed away, since in that form of testimony, we don't require the kinds of testimony that full bate din in ordinary court cases require. So there are cases where, for example, a non-Jew revealing, not even realizing what he is saying, but a non-Jew revealing that somebody has passed away can be allowed to free a woman and allow a woman to marry because we now know that her husband has sadly passed away. So if that's true, then here too, maybe you can say that a Russia, Deino Shel Hamas, a Russia who's a person whose lack of observance is, and yes, I'm well aware that Russia often carries much broader connotations than just lack of observance, but in our context of looking at testimony, that's the element of which we care about it. So this person's lack of observance should not be a barrier to them giving testimony about the woman and allowing her to remarry based on this testimony the husband has passed away. Except that Rav Yosef is aware of the idea, and he's seen this in other books of responsa, and I want to say that I'm skipping here. He very often will say, here's an idea, and look at this book of response, and that book of response, and that book of response, and I'm just going to skip all of that, but we should remember that Rav Yosef has intimate familiarity with a broad sweep of responsa and quotes them, and refers to them and quotes them often. So here the fly in the ointment is, if this flight attendant's violation of Shabbos, he says, in terms of his job, is in order to make a living. So if it's in order to make a living, one could say that this element of this person's lack of observance makes him, in fact, a Rasha de Hamas, makes him, in fact, that his lack of observance is a matter of greed. It's the monetary desire for making a living. One could have theoretically questioned this premise, right? It could be, what if I could show that this flight attendant was fully non-observant before he ever became an LL steward, an LL flight attendant, and you know, was out of work for a while and still was non-observant and will be non-observant. So theoretically, you could say that would help us confirm that his rishut, his lack of observance, has nothing to do with greed. But he's suggesting, and he's seen in certain books of responsa, that maybe that would be a worry. Because once the person is Rasha de Hamas, once we think that their lack of observance is connected to greed, that's when their testimony becomes more of a problem. Because then we're worried that in testimony situations, greed is often a problem. Because what if somebody has a stake in the situation and offers them a bribe? We have to be worried they'll accept a bribe to give false testimony, because we know that monetary issues will lead this person, maybe, to violate the Torah. So that's where it complicates it a little bit, by virtue of the fact that he has his job is connected to his lack of Torah observance. In addition, unfortunately for our attempt to find a way to believe this witness so that this poor woman can remarry, the Maharam Shik that we quoted before had noted that Nimuka Yosef about the idea that if the lack of observance is not connected to greed, then maybe we can accept their testimony more. But the Maharam Shik had said, but that is that even the Nebuchadnezzar Yossi would agree that when it came to a Mechalel Shabbos, if it came to somebody who violated Shabbat in public, so there the Gemara talks about such people, and we're, let me be clear that Rav Yosef is finding his way to cool it to a leniency, and he's going to accept leniency. So anything I'm about to say that's on the stringent side, there's an argument the other way. But it's clear in the Gemara, in the original Talmudic assumption, that somebody who violated Shabbat in public was like a non-Jew for everything. He's like an idolater for all purposes, and that would include being invalid for Eidud Isha. That's what the Maharam Shiket said. So if Rav Yosef is going to say, well, we can follow that perspective, he has to remember and he has to note that we're then going to be ignoring the view of the Maharam Shik, who had understood that Nebuchadnezzar Yosef to be limited not to include a Machal Shabbos for Hesed, somebody who violates Shabbos in public. And another book of response, Ashut Stei Yitzchak Chayot, which Rav Yosef quotes at length, he says, even though we can say that a witness, a certain witness, is like a tinok shenishpa, meaning he grew up non-observant, he never knew what observance was, and therefore, in many halakhic situations, he doesn't have the same culpability for his lack of observance. It's not, we don't assume that Hashem blames this person for the lack of observance in the way that they would somebody who grew up in a fully observant home and then left observance. But it's still true that this person doesn't believe in the Torah and violates Shabbos in public. So this book of response, Ashut Stei Yitzchak Chayot, had held his pasalei, because he can't be a valid witness. So, right, there's, whether we think of the non-observers as creating rishut in the sense of rasha, if we think they're evil, which is the colloquial way of understanding the word rasha, and here we're pointing out that no, it could be that in terms of validity for testimony, when we say somebody's a rasha, we don't mean that we think of them as evil in the sense of culpable, but as long as they don't observe certain things, they might not be able to be valid witnesses, and that's what he held in terms of even a tinok shenishba. So even somebody who we say is fully not liable for what they did, for what they do, and for their lack of observance, doesn't mean they can be valid witnesses, and this shoot was machmir, especially since our general principle is that a mechal Shabbos for Hesia, that somebody who violates Shabbos in public, dinokim umar lechol haTorah, he's like he's rejected all of Torah, especially since this person, if we're talking about them, doesn't believe in the Torah. And once they don't believe in the Torah, this shoot had said, this response, book of response said, we're going to find other responses who take the opposite perspective in a minute, but said that we have to also assume that maybe the person will lie. Because it's not just a gzirat ketuvah, it's not just a pasuk telling us, a verse telling us we can't accept their testimony. It's that once they don't believe in the Torah, this shoot is saying, once they don't believe in the Torah, they don't believe in a God, then we have every reason to think maybe they'll lie in court as well, because why would they, if they don't believe in Anochi Hashem Elokecha, in the commandment to believe in God, they don't believe in the obligation to keep Shabbat, then why would they believe the Torah says you can't give false testimony? And therefore, we can't accept such people's testimony. That's this perspective. Rav Yosef is not done yet, but he's quoting another. So also, Shut Be Yitzchak had written. So Shut Be Yitzchak raised the same idea. You could say, raise the same leniency first. You could say they're like a Tinok Shenishba. They don't know what they're doing. They grew up among non-observant people. They have no idea what observance is, and therefore, maybe we should believe them in terms of Eidud Isha. We wouldn't worry that they would lie. Why wouldn't they would lie? Because there are people who don't know what it is to serve Hashem, and therefore, in that sense, our ra'im la'shamayim, don't keep what Hashem wants them to keep. We don't immediately suspect such people of being ra'im le'briot, of violating ordinary human morality, and telling the truth in court is part of ordinary human morality. And we have no reason to assume that that's what we do, and to apostle them and to say they're not valid witnesses for that reason. Nonetheless, in Mikomakom, he says, this is Shut Be Yitzchak, which I think is Yitzchak Yochanan Spector, an important post of the late 19th century. Ein biyadeinu lahatir neged stimat haShulchan Aruch vaHaposkim, who hold the opposite. We can't go against the general thrust, the general perspective of the Shulchan Aruch and all the deciders you knew till then who held the opposite. However, the only place that the Beit Yitzchak was willing to go was, if we don't know for sure what the Mechal and the Shabbos, then we shouldn't say that just because we have a doubt about their observance that we would say that they're not valid witnesses. Rav Yosef says, but it's clear therefore that if we know that they violate Shabbat, then we have to say that they can't be valid witnesses even for freeing a woman to remarry. So that's the Chumra side, the Machmir side. And I'll pause here to make a point of the fact that even though by now, so this is 100 years after, more than 100 years after Rav Yitzchak Yochanan Spector wrote, even though by now there are many leniencies, and we're going to see some of them that Rav Yosef is going to accept here in this Tshuva from 1980, from Tavshin Mem, It bears remembering the weight of traditional opinion that had to be rejiggered or had to find a workaround to get around it to allow these kinds of things to happen. But and even if it's true, and even if we accept the validity of the leniencies that were found, none of them are going to take away from the fact that the lack of Shabbat observance, this is something I find today people don't remember, the lack of Shabbat observance, whether or not it's culpable, right? A culpable lack of Shabbat observance is somebody who grew up in a certain kind of home and a certain kind of education, and there was no abuse, there was no reason, they just one day decided to stop observing. That's, as far as we understand it, probably culpable. And then there are people who grew up knowing nothing, and that's probably not so culpable. Either way, though, the weight of traditional Jewish opinion was that such people, by virtue of their lack of observance, however we categorize it and however we might judge it, cannot be valid witnesses and are not really considered fully part of the Jewish people because they've sort of rejected and left the Jewish people. That was the original assumption. We're going to work our way a little bit back to maybe taking away some of that now, but that's where that's where the starting point that Rabbi Yosef has to work against in order to free this woman. So he does have a tshuva of a Shut Maharash Engel, who had said that maybe even people who violate Shabbat, even if they do it for the monetary value, so let's say you know somebody who violates Shabbat because they want to keep their business open on Shabbat, because they want to make money on Shabbat, so that's a monetary issue, and therefore might have said this is a Rashad de Hamas, somebody whose lack of observance is fueled by greed. Nonetheless, the Maharash Engel said that doesn't translate into assuming that they'll lie in court, because you can say that even though his svara was, his idea was, even though this person is chashud l'chalal Shabbat fil parnasato, is somebody who we know or suspect will violate Shabbos just to make a living, that doesn't translate into assuming that he'd be willing to cause a woman to unwittingly have a long-term affair, basically, because her first husband is still alive. And he'll do it just for the whatever happenstance pleasure, meaning a parnasa as a livelihood. That's a regular thing. If I know that if I have a six-day-a-week business, I'll make X amount of dollars less than if I have a seven-day-a-week business, and that's too tempting, where Maharash Engel is saying, okay, but that's a regular part of my life. But one time, whatever I might get out of the one-time pleasure of telling this woman she can remarry, and it won't be the witnesses she's remarrying, because she doesn't remarry witnesses in that situation. So whatever that pleasure is, he says, there's no reason to transfer one area to the other. So that's an important idea of leniency, meaning he's claiming that for all that the Gemaras seem to say differently, maybe we can claim that these two areas can be separated from each other. And the lack of Shabbat observance, even as a function of yielding to the temptation of greed, does not have to translate into a lack of a believability in terms of testimony about whether a woman's husband had passed away. And he has one Gemara that sort of suggests it, because the Gemara in Chulin says that if somebody thought they were violating Shabbos, and they really were violating Yom Kippur, that can be considered a shogeg. So to be considered a shogeg, to be considered an unwitting violation, the person has to not know relevant information that might have stopped them from doing it. Because then they're called shav miidiyato. That had they known more information, they wouldn't have done it. Meaning, let's suppose we have somebody who eats non-kosher in three different ways, and they think they're eating non-kosher in one way, but it turns out they're eating non-kosher in a different way. That's a problem. We wouldn't necessarily call that shav miidiyato, because even if they'd known the truth, they wouldn't have done any different. So the Gemara says, if somebody thought it was Shabbos, but it ended up being Yom Kippur, that would be enough for them to be allowed to bring a chatat, to bring a sacrifice to atone for an unwitting transgression, because, here's a key piece from Rash Engel, because people think of Yom Kippur as more serious than they think of Shabbat. So even somebody who would be willing, who thought it was Shabbat, was willing to do a certain action, light a fire, had they known it was Yom Kippur, they wouldn't have. Light a fire is a bad example, sorry. But had they known it was Yom Kippur, they wouldn't have. So Maharash Engel says, if that's true, then even if somebody has yielded to the temptation to keep their business open on Shabbat because of money, that's not necessarily relevant to whether they would lie about a woman's husband having passed away, because that's more serious to people, sadly, because Shabbos is a really, really serious issue, but it's more serious to people to mislead a woman into remarrying when she's really not allowed to remarry. It's also true that halakhically, in order to become an invalid witness, there are those who hold the Sman Choshev Mishpat holds, that you have to tell the person beforehand, and until they're told that they become invalid witnesses by their actions, they're not yet invalid witnesses. And the Chidah agreed that, and so did many, many other poskim, including Rav Cook. And therefore, if you don't tell the person that by virtue of his lack of Shabbos observance, he becomes an invalid for witness, for testimony, then he doesn't. And Rabbi Akiva Eger had said something similar about somebody who shaves with a razor. So Vicky Vager said, if he shaves with a razor but doesn't, nobody ever tells him, you know, by virtue of shaving with a razor, you become considered non-observant such that your testimony is invalid. So Vicky Vager had said, before you can say they're invalid, then you have to tell him and warn him ahead of time so that he can knows it. So, and he this is source ideas talk about somebody who is a gambler or collects taxes for authorities who don't have the right to collect taxes. But nobody ever said that Shul Mechal Shabbos, because Shabbos is so important that everybody knows once you tell somebody that it's a Chil Shabbos, they're violating Shabbos. It was assumed that everybody knew that included losing their right to give testimony. But when it came to rabbinic things like gambling or collecting taxes, where many people do it, and the courts don't have the ability to remonstrate with them, to reprove them for their failures, so they might still think that they're sharing laid, that they are valid witnesses, and that's why you have to tell them ahead of time. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eger said, well, nowadays, when it comes to shaving, when unfortunately many people think you're allowed to shave with a razor and just do it, and the courts don't have the power to protest it, and therefore they don't say anything about it, you would need to inform such a person that they are making themselves invalid for testimony by virtue of doing that. So Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying that when the Gemara sets a standard for becoming pasul le'edut, becoming invalid as a witness, you have to realize and know ahead of time that your action is making you invalid for testimony. Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying, okay, but that depends on the time. And if there's a time when shaving with a razor has become so accepted among the populace and the courts, important thing to think about. The original function of the courts was to let people know what they were doing wrong, to stop them to do it, from doing it, to protest them doing it, maybe to discipline them for doing it. Rabbi Akiva Eger is already living in a time, as we are, when the courts have none of that power. So if they have none of that power, they can't do it. So there might be many, many things. There might be many, many actions that many of us take that are actually against halakha. And we don't realize it because there's nobody letting us know because the courts have no power to do it. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says that has many downsides, but a leniency that's created by virtue of that is that since... And that's what Rabbi Yosef says now. So he's going to do it for razors. Rabbi Yosef says in our time, by Tav Shin Mem, by 1980, when unfortunately Shabbos observance has become in that category, many people violate Shabbat in public, and there's nobody really protesting in any kind of effective way. So it could be that they think of themselves fundamentally as fine Jews. They know that, you know, by the Orthodox, they're not so fine. But they don't really think of themselves as bad Jews by virtue of this. And certainly they don't think that this means that a court will not be able to accept their testimony. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying, according to this line of reasoning, the person would not become invalid for testimony until you told them that. So if you tell them, you have to tell them ahead of time. That would mean that all these flight attendants in El Al who have never been told, maybe they're not fully... Maybe they haven't fully forfeited their right to give testimony by virtue of their action. That's not a completely accepted point of view. The Netzivot HaMishpat, a commentary on Shulchan Aruch as well, disagreed, and he held that anybody who violates something knowingly and on purpose and deliberately will be called a rasha, regardless of the background, will be called a rasha, a transgressor for these purposes. And it's only where that the So he held that it's only for rabbinic invalidations that we have to tell them ahead of time, but other than that, we don't. And so too, others agreed with him about that. So he had a machloket, an important machloket achronim, about what is necessary or not necessary in terms of making somebody invalid for testimony. Rabbi Akiva Eger had floated the idea that even if somebody violates the Torah at a biblical level, there might be situations where they're not yet invalid witnesses unless they've been told ahead of time that their actions will make them invalid. That was Rabbi Akiva Eger and those who went with Rabbi Akiva Eger. His example was shaving with a razor, but Rabbi Yosef is saying, but that's easily expandable to any violation of the Torah that people don't realize is a violation. But there was also a slew of other authorities, including the Tzivos HaMishpat, including Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein and Levush Mordechai, an important slew the other way, who said the other way, that no, that it's only rabbinic situations. The only situations where a chazal invalidates somebody's testimony, there you'd need the informing the person ahead of time. So that's another question or issue that comes up. Another reason, so now pushing forward, so he has a little bit more reason now to say this witness is valid, because you have these group of achronim who would say he was still valid because nobody told him ahead of time that he was invalid. Another room for suggesting that he'd be still a valid witness. Another place for leniency was there's a shoot called Yehuda Ya'aleh. The truth is there are two responsive books called Yehuda Ya'aleh, or a few. So this one is called Yehuda Ya'aleh Assad, because it was by Rav Yehuda Assad. He had suggested, so the previous option was you have to tell him ahead of time that he'll become invalid by virtue of this action. He had suggested that in order for somebody to have the status of Mechalel Shabbos for Hesya, of a public Sabbath violator who's treated like an idolater, in terms of, not our topic, but in terms of that not we can't let them touch our wine. Today that's a whole issue that comes up, but when we have wine that's not mevushel, that's not cooked, as it were, that's not heated to the point that we don't have to worry about non-Jews touching it, the halacha really is that certain kinds of Jews, if they touch it, would also render that wine not allowed to be drunk. So he says, in order for the Jew to get that status, you have to give testimony about them in a Beit Din, in a Jewish court, in front of them, saying, so-and-so violated the Torah, violated Jewish law in such and such a way. And there were many responsa that agreed with this claim, including Shut Melamed Lahoel, which is Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. And then he also has another shut called Zikan Aaron Velkin, who said that it's not only that we need witnesses that somebody violated the Torah, the Rav Holland had said very clearly that it's not enough that we, as Rav Yosef said, it's not enough that we know that all El Al flight attendants violate Shabbos. We would need specific testimony about this specific person before we were to violate them. So those are several reasons why we could say that a random person, even though we have good reason logically to know that they're Shabbos violators, we don't have to halachically know it. We don't have to technically know it until we have testimony, and maybe testimony in front of them in court that says that they violated Shabbos. Unfortunately, while that might still be true, there are those who held Shut Imre Yosher, who Rav Avad Yosef, I think, holds up very greatly. Shut Imre Yosher had said that even if we accept that perspective and that view, that's only in most prohibitions of the Torah. But when it comes to worshiping idols, or here's the one that's going to be bad for us, violating Shabbos in public, so there that'll be different. And we won't require testimony in front of them in the ways that we had just said. We'll just, based on general knowledge, this person violates Shabbos in public, that would be good enough for us to invalidate, to say that they're not a valid witness. So we're sort of in the middle now. We've got some reasons to accept the testimony, to say that this is not enough to invalidate him, but we also have many reasons not to say it. One of the saving graces is that our topic here is heter aguna, is that we're trying to help a woman who's stuck because her husband has disappeared and is presumed dead, but we don't have full evidence that he's dead, that he's passed away. So their halacha was very, very makil. Chazal were very concerned that women should not be in this situation. And therefore, they accepted all sorts of things that we don't ordinarily accept, such as a goy mesiach lefitum. A goy mesiach lefitum means a non-Jew who ordinarily we don't always trust their testimony as testimony, but if a non-Jew casually mentions something, we will rely on that in terms of saying that a woman can be remarried. And part of that is because Chazal assumed that before women would remarry, they would do their best to figure out, to be sure that their husband had passed away, and therefore we can trust that as well. Therefore, Rav Avad Yosef says, here too, he thinks that gives us room, even though he's listed important people on either side of the debate, because it's a halachic situation where Chazal have shown us that we should lean towards leniency. He thinks here you can rely on the leniency because you have no greater shot at the cock than this one. You have no greater pressing situation because it's clear in this situation, unless this flight attendant's testimony was going to be acceptable, then she's going to stay in aguna, and you're going to have many, many women who will be in a similar situation who will then be made agunot all of the days of their lives, and we don't want that in halacha. See, gives an example of Chatam Sofer in the early 1800s or the mid-1800s, who was talking about whether or not testimony in non-Jewish courts can be considered valid for halachic purposes in terms of freeing women. He said originally he thinks his original inclination was the Chatam Sofer. He thought that when Chazal laid out leniencies in order to allow women to remarry, those are only the leniencies that we're allowed to assume. So that one witness can be accepted, one valid witness can be accepted, that if it's a non-Jew or a non-observant Jew who's just mentioning it by the way, whatever it is. But that would not include testimony in a civil court, in a non-Jewish court, unless it was a Mesiach Lefitumbo. But then Chatam Sofer says, and this is the key point for Rav Yosef, that was all in the earlier generations where they could handle it that way, and that was sufficient to take care of the problems that they had. But in his time, when there were several hundred Jews who had been killed in some battle, in some war, whatever he was talking about, if we don't allow these kinds of testimony, the testimony in the non-Jewish courts, you're going to have lots and lots of women who are going to be agunot, and therefore, the Chatzam Sofer thought we had to lean, we had to pass, and we had to rule on the lenient side to help free these women. I see that I've gone over my time because it's a really interesting tshuva, and I just think all these pieces are interesting. I'll just close with the fact that there are many, many situations of leniency here in terms of non-observant people in our day, in terms of Tinok and Ishba, that they don't realize. He also thinks that it might not be considered public anymore, violation of Shabbos, because since everybody does it, it doesn't have the same sting. So it used to be that the reason why violating Shabbos in public made you clearly a non-Jew for these purposes was because you were violating public standards of what it meant to be Jewish. But in later times, when many, many people, including important communal members, violate, so then many people held that it didn't carry the same status. It didn't really quite count as Shabbat, public Shabbos violation. And then finally, he closed with pointing out that already in the time of the Truman Adeshin, which is hundreds of years ago, but even in the Chatam Sofer as well, in his time, that as communications have gotten better, the whole idea that somebody would disappear who was still alive, and that we wouldn't hear from them for years and years and years, Rav Yosef says, there's room in Halacha to say that we don't have to worry about that anymore, we don't have to believe that anymore. I would just add that I'm not sure that that's true, because you have situations where people find each other after decades and still. But that was a very Paskin, so for all these reasons he held that this woman could remarry, that he could ratify the ruling of this Beit Din, that this woman could remarry based on this testimony, which even though it would ordinarily not be considered valid testimony, our deep halachic concern with helping women who are in uncomfortable and stuck situations get remarried would allow us to be matir this woman to be remarried. And that is a responsible day for the 10th of Av. Revive Yosef on how we allow who we believe to allow an aguna to remarry. Have a great day.